joined now by new Titans head coach Brian Callahan. Coach, first of all, congratulations. And I just want to say that yesterday, and I told you before we sat down, I said, hey, I'm kind of the mean guy around here, and so, you know, it's okay. But I thought yesterday, everybody wins their introductory press conference. You won yours, too. But when you started talking about your entire family, and then I listened to you talk about everybody in Cincinnati,
yep,
and the emotion when you were talking about Zach Taylor, and then you talked about everybody in the building and how you wanted to meet everybody out there, and I was like, this is where society is headed. This is, instead of the way, like, my grandparents grew up in the Great Depression.
Sure.
And I think the idea then was, hey, you should be lucky that you have a job, and you should be thankful to get to go there every day. And if they tell you to do whatever, you do it. And I don't think society works like that anymore.
No, I don't think so either.
And so when I was listening to you yesterday talk about how you built your program, I'm like, this is going to be a program where it feels to me like you really want to make sure that everybody, even if they're not a player, feels like they're a special part of building what you want the Titans to be.
Absolutely, because if you don't have that, and people don't want to be around you, and people don't want to be in the building, then you're going to have a harder time connecting with people, and you're going to have a harder time getting things done that you want to get done. And that doesn't mean that the culture that I preach is, you know, it's not all kumbaya. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm, there's still a lot of work to be done, and we're going to be demanding, and we're going to be hard on all those things. But if you don't start your program with, you're trying to build relationships, then I think you're missing the point.
Coach, I want to start with the quarterback here, because I know, you know, when you take this job, it's kind of like a, hey, what do you think of Will Levis? What do you this? What do you that? But what is it like in terms of a partnership with the quarterback? And the reason why I ask about the partnership with the quarterback is because, well, quite frankly, if you guys didn't get Joe Wright in Cincinnati, you would have been just as fired as he would have been.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's not even more about like a, hey, you play for me. It's more of a, I think, where we are with the quarterback and the coach and the offensive staff and even the offensive line, everything else. It's like a, hey, we're all in this together right here. When you look at that partnership with Will Levis, where do you think you're probably most excited to get started?
I think there's room for – there's such incredible room for him to grow. And he has all the physical tools that you would want in a quarterback. And he's a really intense competitor from what I've seen on tape. You know, I see him putting his shoulder down. We probably want to do less of that. But I see him compete really hard, and I think it's important to him. And so there's a refinement that can happen, especially for him. Now he gets to take all the OTA reps, all the training camp reps, and now he's got a chance to develop, whereas he was sort of competing for a job last year, and rightfully so. You know,
sure,
that's how it works. But to see how he played in games with the little bit of reps that he had, there's a lot of really positive things. There's plenty of things that we can correct. But I told him when I first called him that really the most important relationship in the building outside of me, Ran, and Amy is my relationship with him. And you do everything you can to prop the quarterback and put him in a great position. Without that sort of relationship with him and I, it would be difficult. And the best part about it for Will is that he's going to be able to have some input. I want to put him in great position, so the things that he likes, we'll try to highlight. The things that he's not as good at, we'll try to work on and integrate as he gets better. So I think that Will has the ability to be a really good player, and he's willing to work at it. And so my job is to help him get there.
The two things I see with him that I look at that could maybe hold him up, one is – there's too many plays that I say are boneheaded plays, but plays that he would like to have back. Mm-hmm. Whether it's a missed throw here or whether it's an interception there or whatever it may be. The second thing is that, quite frankly, over the last 2 years, he gets injured too much. And some of that may be supporting him with a better offensive line or with a better scheme to protect him and get the ball out, or receivers getting open sooner, all of that. But when you look at those two things in particular, how do you go about addressing each one? And do you see the same thing I see?
Yeah, there's and that's, I guess that's probably the best way for me to say that that's where the room for improvement comes. And I think when you watch, you know, the plays that you'd like to have back, one of the first things that I've done with quarterbacks every offseason is you take all the interceptions. You take all the throws that should have been interceptions, the ones that didn't count,
sure,
but they should have. And you evaluate what part went wrong. Was it a decision-making error? Was it a accuracy error? Was it a timing error? And then was it a did you force the ball? Did the ball just get tipped? So every interception tends to have its own story. And so as few of those that can be decision-making errors, mm-hmm. that's now when what you're trying to get to. Like, you're going to throw interceptions. It happens. The ball is going to get tipped. Guys are going to make great plays. But for the quarterback, how do you best keep the ball out of harm's way with your decision-making, with your accuracy, with your timing? And so that's how you look at it. And that's how I see it. And I think there's a lot of room for him to improve with those things over what he's put on tape last year. And obviously we get now a chance to really dig our teeth into an offensive system for a whole offseason without having to worry about competing for the job in that sense.
New Titans coach Brian Callahan's with us. How much film prep did you do for these interviews? Because you're interviewing with all these different teams, and I mean, I know how much like watching film really is. It's not like we watched an hour of film. It's a lot bigger than that. So how much prep did you do for these interviews, and specifically the Titans?
I watched a little bit of every team that I interviewed for, but the ones that I've, you know, the ones where there was some quarterback questions, Carolina. Here, I wanted to make sure that when they asked me about the quarterback, I had a really solid answer and an opinion that was researched. And so I did watch quite a bit of tape of Carolina, and I watched all of Will's reps from the season. And so I just wanted to make sure that when I got asked the question, I was based on what I've seen, not what I thought I've heard or what I saw in two or three games in crossover. So I tried my best to be informed. You can't watch every bit of everybody for the interviews, and a lot of it's not really about that part yet. But the young quarterbacks that I knew were going to be questions in the interview process, I wanted to make sure I had a good feel for and were able to articulate the right answer.
Last one on Will. Everybody that I've ever talked to that's been around Will, whether it's here or, you know, I talked to Coach Stoops about it last summer, I talked to Coach Cohen before the draft about it, and everybody that's ever been around Will Levis just freaking loves the kid. Mm-hmm. Like, Coach Cohen told me that his academic advisor at Penn State went to Indianapolis to watch him throw at the combine. And it's like, okay. But then there's kind of this reputation with Will Levis that maybe he rubs people the wrong way. How much, you know, again, you said you met him just briefly yesterday. Mm-hmm. How much when, because I know you probably did some homework on him talking to other people as well. How much did you get a sense that maybe that reputation's a little overblown?
That's what I felt. I felt like there was it kind of got exacerbated with some of the stories from the draft, you know, the mayonnaise and the banana thing and like just kind of stuff that's silly and doesn't really matter.
Sure.
And I think that's contributed to the perception. I'm the same way. Nobody that I've really talked to has said anything negative about him. And really everything that I've heard at his time here so far is that he loves football, he loves preparing, he's made of the right stuff. And so that part makes me excited. And that's, I haven't sat down with him long enough to form that opinion myself, but I think the best thing that I have going and he has going with me is that I don't have any preconceived notions, and him and I get a chance to start from the beginning and build a relationship. And so he can be whoever he wants to be in that regard. And I'm going to let him. So hopefully some of those things are the silly stuff is silly stuff, and he is more about what everyone says he's about. That's what it seems like.
So when it was reported you were getting the job, there was like this kind of dig up of all your interviews, and you did an interview before the draft last year where you talked about the offensive line and said that maybe the best offensive lineman was a tackle out of Northwestern who you thought might be more of a guard.
Yeah.
The Titans drafted Peter. They played him at guard last year. There's always been this question about, is Peter going to play guard or is Peter going to play tackle?
Yeah.
I don't know what the draft board looks like. I don't know what the pro board looks like.
Yep.
But is there still a discussion of where Peter may play, or are you set on Peter at guard?
I think there's always a discussion. I don't know. You know, that was just my opinion when we were getting ready for the draft on where he fell. I thought he was an outstanding football player. And a lot of times there's traits involved where that doesn't necessarily translate as great to tackle, mm-hmm. Especially when you're talking about like length and things like that. The edge is a tough place to play sometimes if you don't have those things. Now his athleticism and movement skills and strength are top notch, so we'll see. We'll leave that up to as we get the staff together. We'll still evaluate that. I don't want to pin myself in a corner and saying he's just going to be a guard and all of a sudden you see him at tackle, but I felt like when he's come on the draft that was probably his best position. Not to say that as we get going and we get to know him and we start practicing, that maybe he still can play tackle. He obviously was really good at it at Northwestern, so I don't want to paint myself in a corner.
So you guys have the 7th pick, and if Peter's not your left tackle, you got to go get a left tackle. And I look at a situation when you were in Cincinnati where the offensive line needed a lot of work, and you guys went out in free agency and did it, but you sat there with the 5th pick in the draft, and it was either the really good wide receiver or the really good offensive lineman. And both Sewell and Chase have been really good NFL players.
Yep.
You may be in a similar spot here.
No doubt.
Where there's a really good wide receiver and a really good tackle. Did that experience maybe shape how you view that kind of conundrum?
It did, and I'll give you the full story on how that came to be, because I think it's a good story. But I'll preface it by saying that every situation is different.
Sure.
But when I was in Denver, we were built very similarly to how we were ended up being built in Cincinnati. We had 3 really good receivers and a really fantastic quarterback in Peyton Manning, and so that's how he liked to play. That's the way we played offense. And I just remember in a game, and I think it was probably like in November, we played the Patriots at home, and that was a critical game because we never wanted to have to go to Foxborough in the playoffs, and we knew that they were going to be a contending team, we were going to be a contending team, and so that number one seed was really important. And I just remember a game, it's kind of late in the game, got to have it, and we throw a go ball down the right sideline for about 40 yards and a go ball down the left sideline like within 4 or 5 plays that puts us in position to win the game, because New England's going to play press man coverage and challenge you and make you have to complete the ball and go beat their corners, who were pretty good. And we won that game. And that always resonated with me. Like, when it came down to having to win the game, we had players on the perimeter that could go win one-on-one matchups.
Kind of like the ball you threw here in the playoffs.
Very similar to the ball we threw here in the playoffs. Which brings me to that's the next part of the story is even in a game where we got battered up front and Joe got sacked 9 times and probably hit 15 and, you know, we really, outside of one drive and one explosive play, didn't really do much in that game. And we get a turnover late in the game, and now they're going to play two-man, and Jamar goes and wins versus two-man and wins the game. And so those moments have always stuck with me. When a push comes to shove, do you want to have someone that can go score touchdowns and go win versus tight coverage? And in that debate, the Sewell-Chase debate, which was, again, 2 players that you knew, whichever one we take is probably going to be a 10-time Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro style player. Mm-hmm. And Panay was fantastic, and we loved him. And Jamar was fantastic, and we loved him. And the debate went back and forth, and which one do we need? And I landed on the Jamar Chase side because I saw what he could do for our offense. And I saw Joe throwing to him in college. And so that also helps. Like, you it's not hard to visualize what it's going to look like. Mm-hmm. And the difference there to me is, like, Jamar was an elite player. And in that moment for our team in Cincinnati, the elite player that can score touchdowns versus the elite player that can protect the quarterback with the style of quarterback that we had and the style of offense that we ran, we took the guy that could score touchdowns. And it turned out and great for us the next season. Does that mean that that's the same here?
I knew you were going to wrap that up with a, does that mean that with the 7th pick here, we're going to do the same thing? Yeah. No, because the players are different. I saw that.
But that is, there is a philosophy where I tend to lean to the guys that can score touchdowns. Because if you're playing the quarterback position well and playing it right, you can negate some of the issues you have as in pass protection if you're playing on time and throwing the ball accurate and all those things. So that's a long-winded way of saying we'll see. but there is that's a great debate, and it's going to be interesting to see how that shapes up.
So Derrick Henry scored a lot of touchdowns here for the Titans.
He
is a free agent, and I do wonder, you know, what the thought is, because it feels like watching him, he thinks right now at least that the chapter is closed with him and the Titans. And I would never, if I was hiring a coach, I wouldn't say, hey, you have to re-sign a 30-year-old back who's probably going to cost a significant amount of money because he's as special of a player as he is. But I do wonder, is it just a, hey, you know, it ended on a great note for him and he was a great player and, you know, on we go? Or is it, hey, it's something we're certainly considering?
I would certainly consider the option. And he has to obviously want that as well. But, you know, he's been the face of the franchise, and he's still a really good ball carrier. And you watch that last game against Jacksonville, and he still looks like Derrick Henry. And you know, I think if that's as we get into the roster phase of this here, as we get the staff hired and we get into the roster part, that's a conversation to have, because I do think he is a great player. You always are mindful of how you're building your roster and those position values and where you're spending your money. But I mean, Derrick Henry is a fantastic football player, and he's been a pain to play against for the last handful of years. And, you know, I'm certainly open to what that could look like.
What do you make of the leadership element there? Cause it is a young team, especially on offense, if he's not there.
Yeah. And, that's an important part. And, you know, I think back sometimes to, I wasn't in Cincinnati when it happened, but they released Andrew Whitworth, and probably rightfully so, in the sense that, you know, he was 35 years old,
sure.
and it was, they probably felt like it was time. And I wasn't a part of the decision, but when we got there, all anybody ever said was, when they released Whitworth, there was a gigantic void in the leadership in the locker room, and we felt that when we got there in 2019, as Whit's going on to the Rams and playing in Super Bowls. And so that part of it was always made me think about, there is a place for veteran players that have really, really deep leadership roles in the locker room. And I don't underestimate that effect on the unit. So those are things that you consider when you're talking about bringing back older players and paying guys. Like, that part is part of the formula.
So I'm going to tell you a story. Last one here. Brian Callahan's with us. I'm going to tell you a story. And everybody listening probably knows this story. Robbie knows this story. But years and years ago, when I first started at the radio station, we had the old general manager of the Titans, Floyd Reese, name on the wall over there. Mm-hmm. He was working there, and we ended up working together for about 5 years. But before we were working together, I had just met the guy. And I grew up a huge Titans fan, and so it's like, this is Floyd Reese. So we're doing our first show together, and I'm just trying to, like, break the ice because I don't even know him. So I said, this was 2015. The team was terrible. They were 3-13 that year. I go, Floyd, are the Titans going to be any good this year? This might have been April after the draft. And he looked at me and he goes, we don't have a right tackle. I said, that's important, huh? He said, right tackle? I was like, it's pretty important. So the last couple of years, I feel like I've had to tell that story on the radio a bunch. So right tackle is apparently pretty important. I just want you to know that story so I don't have to tell it anymore on the radio.
I'll say this. Anymore, the way the NFL's set up, everybody's got, usually has at least one dynamic pass rusher. Mm-hmm. Most of them have two. And so if you don't have two tackles, it's going to be hard. And that is an issue for every team in the league, because the defensive line continues to get bigger and faster and stronger.
Well, and they don't let you practice on offensive line anymore.
And it's hard. Exactly right. So you're at a disadvantage from the get-go up front, just from that spot. And so, yes, right tackle is important, and we need as many good tackles as we can find.
Coach, congratulations. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Brian Callahan, Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.